Well, let's take a look back through elections past, shall we?
Because I don't believe we can have a strong and growing economy without a strong and growing middle class.
We need to make the middle class more accessible.
We're at risk of losing our great American middle class and of becoming a two-tiered society with a few successful people at the top and everyone else struggling below.
Well, people have been talking about the decline of the middle class since the 1970s. And they're not just talking about it. There's significant evidence that the middle class is on the decline. Why? We have a person with us who says it's because of our political system and that the changes that have occurred in Washington in both parties since 1970. Jacob Hacker is a professor of political science at Yale and co-author of the new book, Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. Good morning, Jacob.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
I want to be very clear. You're not talking about any policies coming from the Republicans or from the Democrats. You're talking about a bipartisan shift going on in Washington that has made it difficult for the middle to survive. Is that right?
What we're talking about is almost every policy that came from Republicans and Democrats over this period, particularly the most important ones. So this is a bipartisan shift. Over the last 30 years, we've seen a massive concentration of income at the very top, and I think we tend to assume that that had nothing to do with politics and policy. But what we find in our book is that again and again, it was because of things that government did and didn't do, and Democrats were not the most complicit party in this, but they played a big role. Republicans played the biggest role, but Democrats were really enablers, if you will, over a lot of this period.
Well, give me some specific examples when legislative change has led to struggles for the middle class.
Well, I'll give you two, and I'll talk about one. And one is tax cuts for the rich, and the second is financial deregulation. But on the first one, in the 1960s, the average individual tax rate, federal income tax rate, paid by the top 400 taxpayers was around 40%. So that's the average that the richest 400 taxpayers paid. By the mid-1990s, it was down to 30%, and in 2007, it was 16.5%. And, of course, over the same period, the top 400 taxpayers were richer and richer. We're talking about people who are making hundreds of millions and even billions of dollars a year. So that's a pretty powerful way of getting the rich richer.
Although conservatives would say during that same period of time we had the greatest prosperity in the history of the United States.
Well, on that front, they would be wrong. And the greatest prosperity we had was in the 30 years after World War II, when incomes grew relatively equally across all groups. In fact, what we show in the book is that if you look at, say, the middle 20% of the population, they saw their incomes between 1979 and 2007 increase by around 20% in real dollars after inflation, whereas the top 1% saw their incomes increase by over 250% over that same period. So, yeah, it's not as if the middle has fallen absolutely. They've seen a 20% real income increase over 30 years, but they have, relatively speaking, fallen, and most of the gains of economic growth have gone to the richest of the rich.
Well, I mean, this is an argument that Elizabeth Warren has been talking a lot about in Washington, is that the America's economy is bolstered by the middle class, and that therefore we have to take steps to save the middle class. Is that the case? I mean, if this is true, that we have shifted our policies to sort of favor the big earners, maybe that's where our economy lies. Maybe it doesn't no longer rests on the backbone of the middle class.
Well, I don't believe that's true. I don't think most Americans believe it's true. The reason we think that the middle class is the backbone of a strong economy is that we understand that a thriving democracy and a thriving economy has to be built on, you know, the broad middle. And both our economy and our democracy are ailing right now because there is so much money in our politics and because there's so much money at the top of the income pyramid. I would just give one example of why this really matters. Is, you know, right now we have Wall Street thriving but not lending, and Main Street struggling and desperately in need of jobs and employment. And it strikes me that right now our priorities have to be on rebuilding the middle class.
And in fact, in your book, you point out that last year, which was so difficult for so many people across the country, in fact, the executives at the 38 largest companies earned a record $140 billion. But you know, there's another point that you make in your book, which I wanted to have you talk about, which is that the political system is supposed to be the check on this. People are supposed to be able to vote in those who are watching for their best interests and vote out those who may take away from whatever they're earning. Why is that not working?
That's the big question of our book. After all, it's one thing if in a sort of oligarchic political system you have this kind of outcome, but it's another thing when you have a democracy. And we argue that one of the reasons is that you really have to look beyond elections and look at lobbyists and organized interest groups. And over the last 30 years, those groups have become much more influential. And also, there's been a real decline in the kind of middle-class organizations, unions, voluntary organizations that represented the middle class. So you can't expect elections alone to right the balance. Most voters have only a limited understanding of complex policy issues. You know, they still think that the TARP legislation was passed under President Obama, even though it was under George W. Bush. So it's not surprising right now with the economy so bad that they're really angry. But they're kind of like that farmer in John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, asking, who can we shoot? They're not sure exactly where the blame lies for what's happened. And in this book, we pinpoint the blame really on a bipartisan but particularly Republican agenda that reflects organized interest group power rather than voters' interests.
But that would suggest that if you had more of what you call middle-class organizations like unions, that would help to balance the power. And yet we've seen with, say, the UAW, that's caused problems that have led to economic problems. And we've had a lot of complaints against the teachers' union as well, that it's stymied progress.
Well, putting aside the problems that might be caused, let me just say that I certainly believe that if unions had a broader presence, that we'd have more voters who are aware of these trends, and that's the basic point we're making. But look, I understand that many people would say, you know, Thomas Hobbes once said that they who are discontented under monarchy call it tyranny, that many people are going to think that what we're saying is that we don't like the policies that have been produced. And why I want to emphasize that is we don't like those policies, but we don't actually think they're the product of a well-functioning democracy. I mean, look at this election, right, with the millions, actually over a billion, several billion dollars that were spent in negative, misleading ads, the money
sides.
That was spent on this election. So, I mean, Americans are very upset. But they need more guidance than they're going to get.
They need to be better informed. Jacob Hacker, professor of political science at Yale, co-author of the new book, Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class.